This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. John Edgar Wideman's family story leaves you baffled by the mysteries of human behavior. Wideman is a former college basketball star and Rhodes Scholar who is now a college professor, novelist, and winner of 2 Penn Faulkner Awards. His brother Robbie is serving a life sentence for murder. Wideman's memoir, Brothers and Keepers, reflected on the forces that enabled him to get out of the ghetto while his brother fell into a life of crime. More recently, Wideman has been consumed by another family tragedy. His own son is serving a life sentence for a 1986 murder. Although Wideman prefers not to discuss his son and his brother, he's written a new memoir that he describes as a meditation on fathers and sons, race, and society, called Father Along. It's a nominee for the National Book Award in Nonfiction. Let's start with a short reading.
The first rule of my father's world is that you stand alone. Alone, alone, alone. A fact about which we have no choice or say, carved in stone above the portal we enter when we arrive on this earth. Your work in the world is to grasp this truth, never lose sight of it, turn it so it catches light from all angles, squeeze it till its hardness, its intractability, is alchemied into a source of strength. Accept the bottom line, icy clarity of the one thing you can rely on, nothing. Your power, your work, is to exempt yourself from illusion, handle yourself, conduct your business without ever forgetting who and what you can count on. Nothing. You are proud when you don't let yourself forget and always wind up regretting your slips, those occasions when you compromise, when you let go of the truth even for a second, even in the smallest exchanges with the few people you allow a smidgen closer to you than you allow anyone else. You are, if you're my father, calculating, relentless, disciplined beyond belief in adhering to this self-imposed regimen. Not because it brings happiness or satisfaction in the usual sense. You don't expect to make things better. You don't do what you do in order to produce consequences anywhere but within your own skull, on the meter, toting up your hard-headed power to deny, to withdraw, to remain detached. What counts is the doing, the discipline, the engagement with nothing on its own terms. My mother's first rule was love. She refused to believe she was alone. Be not dismayed, whate'er betides, God will take care of you.
John Edgar Wideman, thank you for reading that. Which world were you most comfortable in, the world where the philosophy is you're alone, or which is your father's, or the world of your mother's philosophy, that love is everything?
Well, I think I was a tennis ball, and I bounced back and forth from one to the other. And in a sense, that's what Father Along is about, trying to reconcile the power of the mother and the power of the father and the form that power takes in our particular society.
Do you see those two different worldviews, one that you're alone and the other that everything is about love, as being a function of gender or just the specific views of your father and your mother?
Well, not necessarily attached to gender, but I think I was culturally conditioned to attach warmth and love and closeness to a sort of female principle or my mother, and and something else entirely like strength and power and independence to a male principle, something like my father.
You write that you never learned how to behave when you encountered your father's hardness. What was difficult about encountering that?
What was difficult is, I think, the very lesson he was trying to teach me, and that is not everybody in the world loves you, and that you have to be prepared for that, and you have to expect doors to be slammed in your face. You have to expect people to disappoint you. You have to expect the world to turn out not the way you always want it. And I think my father had experienced all that negativity personally, as an individual, as a member of an African-American community particularly. And in a sense, it was his responsibility to keep me aware and alert of that side of things.
Your father left the family when you were 28 and when your youngest brother was 17 or 18. So you had a father at home when you were growing up, but it sounds like you never really spent that much time with him, in part because he was busy working much of the time. That's the predicament so many children have been and who have fathers.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely the case, which meant that I had to create a father in my imagination. And that might be the beginning of, or one of the places where my imagination begins to take the form that, it eventually did take in order to be a writer, dealing with absence, making something out of nothing, having great feeling, great affection for my father, knowing he had a great affection and love for me, but not having it at hand, not being able to simply reach out and touch it. So I had to make a place in myself where I could make contact with him.
Did you like your father when you were young? And do you like him now? And I don't mean love in the sense that sons love their fathers. I mean like him as a man.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. There was some fear in all this. But that fear was also respect. I mean, he was a big body and I was a little body. He had all the power. I had no power. But what I liked was I remembered him as an athlete. I remembered his shoes and how large they were. And I remembered his strength. I remembered him sort of shadow boxing in the house and the way he could make the air pop when he did that. And he's a very engaging person. He liked to joke around and smile. By the time I was an adult, now of course my reactions were more complex. I knew that that he and my mother had their problems, marital problems. I knew that he was sometimes around and sometimes not. So he became much more of a person rather than a mythical figure. But I still had those childhood reminiscences of closeness and his power and that attraction.
Do you feel that you live in a different world than your father does? Your father lives in a housing project with a lot of senior citizens who are on Social Security, and they're preyed on by hoodlums and junkies in the neighborhood. You're a professor at a university. You've lived in several different places. You taught in Wyoming for many years. You teach in Amherst, Massachusetts now. You travel in a very different world, a world of, you know, very educated people, very middle-class people.
I think one burden of my writing has been to remind myself and remind other people that those aren't really different worlds, that they're obviously separate in many ways. But unless we pay more attention to the necessary connections and the ethical and moral connections between these kinds of different worlds, then we're all doomed.
My guest is John Edgar Wideman. His new memoir is called Father Along. We'll be back after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is John Edgar Wideman. His new memoir is a meditation on fathers and sons, race, and society. The ghetto was a world you wanted to get out of, and you succeeded. Your father is still in it. Do you feel this responsibility to help him get out? Do you think he'd want to get out? I think that's a complicated thing for anyone in a family that kind of changes a class from their parents.
Yeah, the class and race and gender are all involved because they're all defined by the kind of world that you grow up in, and then the world that you might find some way to enter because of your job or whatnot. I think that for me, I never really left that world. I never really left it, not emotionally. And part of what I'm doing in this book, Father Along, and in the writing that I do is reconstructing that world for myself and for other people, and reconstructing the possibilities of reconciliation. And I don't think of it as the place I grew up as a ghetto. I think of it sometimes in those terms, and I know you don't necessarily mean anything negative by that phrase or that word ghetto, but I hated that word. I refused to use it for years and years and years.
What did it mean to you?
It was a put-down, simply. It was somebody saying something nasty or negative about a world they usually didn't know anything about. Mm-hmm. And so it was a word that sort of that would make me angry, whether I saw it in print or whether people use it. It's a label. And all my life, I've been resisting labels. But it's become almost it's an unavoidable term to describe lower socioeconomic areas, depressed areas where black people live. But it's still, once it becomes universal and once everybody begins to use it, it's not something only about a word. It's a whole attitude. It's a whole stance towards that community. I've always preferred the word community. And then you can say, well, economically it's depressed, but another way it's not, and et cetera, et cetera. Because with community is much more open-ended. It allows for some kind of negotiation of what in fact is there.
The final part of your book, Father Along, is about your relationship to your son, Jake. And Jake was convicted of murdering his roommate on a summer camping trip. Both of them were 16 at the time. He's now spending a life sentence in prison. And I'm wondering if thinking about your son is part of what led you to reexamine your relationship to your father.
Well, I think it's the other way around. I think I had a very specific desire for some reasons we've discussed and some not, that I wanted to write about my father, to look at history. But I realized also that we're talking. I was broaching a subject that is kind of circular. I'm a father and a son, and I also have a son. And so I needed to think, or I did think, about my kids as I wrote this book about my father. I realized also that I was writing this book about my father as a way of preserving a family past and a collective past. And so in that sense, it was addressed to my children.
Where are things now in your son's case?
They are in a place where I can't really talk about, because there's still live legal issues, and I've been advised not to talk about them while things are still in flux. And it's been a long time, and it's crazy, but that's still the case.
Do you think you'll ever write a more extensive piece about your son, Jake, or is that something that you think you might never care to share in detail with the public? It strikes me that it must be very hard for you as a writer who's trying to come to terms with the subject of fathers and sons, and also race and class in America. And one of the most complex personal stories is a story that I don't think you really want to talk about very much, which I understand, but I'm wondering if at some point you think you might.
Well, the advantage of being a writer is you talk about things in your own way.
Right.
And sometimes people can look at your biography and make guesses about what, in fact, you're writing about and thinking about. But other times they can't. And so I take, it's a complicated way of taking the fifth, if you will. It's also a way of maintaining privacy, but having the luxury for a writer of dealing with very complex and personal material, but not in the sort of yellow journalistic way, you know, like those newspapers you see in the supermarket. I mean, I can talk about how I feel about my daughter and her basketball, but you as reader would not necessarily know that, because you might be reading a story about a soccer player who's a boy or a male. Or I can talk about my anger at the legal system, and it wouldn't necessarily take the form of an autobiographical essay that has to do with anybody that you would recognize, or that somebody else could attach. That's literature is more complex than that. Literature is not reductive. It allows for one thing. One reason I like to write is because I can both explore the most intimate, personal issues and problems, but do it in my terms, in my way, so that I can still maintain that privacy.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
John Edgar Wideman's new memoir, Father Along, is nominated for a National Book Award. This is Fresh Air.